Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive. Today we're looking at life in the Kurd-Dar region, what's now Afrin during the Ottoman period, so roughly 1516 up to 1918.
That's right. And the big question we're tackling is, what was the dominant way of life there? Were people mostly settled farmers, or is it more about nomadic pastoral traditions?
We'll be digging into the sources we have to try and figure that out for you.
Yeah, and the sources are, well, varied. We've got historical analysis, Ottoman administrative records, or what they tell us, and geographical descriptions.
But getting exact numbers, like percentages of farmers versus nomads, that's tough, right?
Very tough. The records back then, they were mostly about taxes and soldiers, not, you know, detailed job surveys.
So we're looking at the qualitative stuff, piecing it together.
Exactly. Synthesizing the evidence to get a well-reasoned estimate. So maybe let's start with the place itself, Kurda.
The mountain of the Kurds, Şeyh-i Kurmenk.
Correct. Northwest corner of modern Syria, bit into southeast Turkey, and under the Ottomans, it fell within the vilayet of Aleppo.
And the land itself, you mentioned geography.
It's quite distinct. Highland territory, part of the limestone massif, so you get hills, but also these really fertile valleys.
Like the Kume Plain, along the Afrin River.
Precisely. That river was sort of the eastern and southern boundary, and this mix of terrain is pretty important.
Because it offers different possibilities. Hills for grazing, valleys for farming.
You got it. Good winter rainfall meant it was excellent for agriculture, especially olives. We'll definitely come back to olives. But yes, the hills offered pasture too.
And the name itself, Kurda, appearing in Ottoman documents.
Yeah, as the Sancak of the Kurds. Mm. It really underlines that long, long connection between Kurdish people and this specific region. That identity is kind of woven into the landscape and its history.
Okay, so diverse landscape, historical Kurdish presence. Let's tackle that main question. Settled farming versus nomadism. Was agriculture dominant?
The evidence does lean that way, strongly, I'd say. I mean, first, the land was suitable, as we said.
Yeah.
And second, the Ottoman Empire itself was fundamentally agrarian. Most people across the empire were farmers, working relatively small family plots.
And the state had systems for this, like the siftane, linking land use and taxes.
That was the theoretical basis, yeah. State land, miri land, cultivated by peasant families who paid taxes based on that unit, the sift.
But that system changed over time.
Oh, definitely. The Taimar system, where land grants supported cavalrymen, declined. And tax farming, iltizam, became much more common. But the underlying reality for most people remained tied to farming the land.
Okay, so agriculture is the backdrop. But in Kurdi specifically, you mentioned olives. Sounds like they were more than just another crop.
Oh, absolutely central. The history there is incredible. Sources suggest maybe 4,000 years of olive cultivation in that area.
4,000 years, wow.
And it wasn't just ancient history. It was a huge economic engine throughout the Ottoman period. Olive groves, olive oil, major income sources.
So it's not just subsistence, it's cash crop trade.
Exactly. Afrin's olive oil was famous, traded widely, especially in Aleppo. It linked the rural Kurdi economy directly into these big urban markets.
Aleppo soap too, right?
That's one of the famous products it went into. And when you hear modern estimates, like millions of ancient olive trees still standing, well, that points to massive long-term investment.
Investment that doesn't really scream nomadic lifestyle. You don't plant an olive grove if you plan on moving next season.
Precisely. It anchors people to the land in a very profound way. That commitment over generations really suggests a settled focus.
Okay, so olives are key. What else were people growing?
It would have been mixed farming, definitely. Growing food for themselves, muna, and for local markets. Things like wheat, barley, legumes, fruits, vegetables.
Maybe grapes, too. You mentioned Antab nearby was known for vineyards.
It's quite possible, yeah. And alongside crops, raising animals was crucial for milk, wool, pulling plows, integrated into the farming system.
And this all happened in and around villages. What were they like?
Village life was the center, much like elsewhere in Ottoman Syria. Villages tended to cluster near water. In the hillier parts, maybe defense was also a consideration in where they were sited.
Houses close together, local materials?
Typically, yes. Stone, mud brick, often flat roofs, used for various things.
And socially, how were villages structured?
Kinship was often really important. Lineage groups could form the core of a village. You'd have shared resources too, like common pasture land.
And leadership.
Usually a village headman, an aga. They'd be the local point person, maybe hosting guests, mediating disputes.
Now, here's something interesting you mentioned earlier, the tribal situation. Compared to other Kurdish areas, Kurdaz tribes were maybe less powerful.
That seems to be the case, especially in the later Ottoman centuries. You don't see the huge, dominant tribal confederations or powerful Kurdish emirates that existed elsewhere.
There were specific tribes, though, like Amakin, Biyan, Shaykan.
Yes, those names are historically associated with the region. But they didn't seem to dominate the social and political landscape in the same way.
What does that imply for the average person, the peasant farmer?
It might mean the relationship with the Ottoman state was perhaps more direct, less mediation through a powerful tribal chief, maybe more direct dealings with tax collectors or local Ottoman officials.
Okay, so settled agriculture seems dominant, anchored by olives, organized around villages, maybe with less overarching tribal control than elsewhere. But there was still a nomadic element, right?
Oh, definitely. Pastoral nomadism was part of the wider Ottoman world. Nomads provided vital things, animal products, transportation. It existed in different forms.
Transhumans, maybe? Moving seasonally?
Yes, that or more extensive nomadism across larger areas. And Kurdaw had the pasture land for it, so pastoral activities certainly coexisted with farming.
Sheep and goats, mostly?
Likely the main ones, yes. Plus cattle, donkeys, mules for transport and work.
But given those weaker tribal structures we talked about, the type of pastoralism might have been different.
That's a key point. It probably wasn't dominated by the large, powerful nomadic confederations you saw in, say, parts of the Syrian steppe or Anatolia.
So maybe more localized movements, like villagers moving their own animals seasonally.
Exactly. More like localized transhumans, or what some scholars call agropastoralism. People who farmed but also moved animals to different pastures part of the year.
A kind of mixed strategy, multi-resource nomadism.
That term fits well, I think. It captures that blending of farming and herding rather than a sharp divide. Less about vast migrations, more about using different ecological niches within the region.
And how did these groups, the settled farmers and the more mobile herders, get along?
It was likely a mix of, well, symbiosis and friction.
Trade. Nomads needing grain, farmers needing wool or animals.
Definitely economic exchange.
Yeah.
But also potential conflict over resources, access to grazing land, water sources. Those could easily become points of tension.
What about that kishlak system? Winter quartering, where nomads stayed near villages. Was that common in Kurdaw?
That system where nomads might demand resources from villagers during winter seems more tied to regions where nomadic tribes were really powerful and could impose themselves.
So maybe less prevalent in Kurdaw because the tribes weren't as dominant?
It's less clear how common it was.
Yeah.
Interactions might have been more localized, perhaps more balanced, less about one group dominating the other in that specific wintering arrangement.
Okay, let's zoom out a bit. How did Ottoman rule itself shape life there?
Well, Kurdaw was part of the Aleppo Vilayet after 1516. The Ottomans aimed for, you know, order, tax collection, defense. They often relied on local intermediaries to manage things.
Like who? Village headmen? Religious leaders?
Those kinds, yes. Maybe some local notables or remaining tribal figures, though perhaps less powerful ones.
And the land system, we mentioned Miriland, state ownership in theory.
Right, the Siftan system being the ideal. Peasants had usage rights. Usufruct, they could farm it, pass it down, but the ultimate ownership rested with the sultan, the state.
But then came iltizam, tax farming.
Yes, and that really changed the dynamic on the ground, auctioning off the right to collect taxes.
It sounds like it could squeeze the peasants.
It often did. The tax farmer, the multizim, paid a lump sum to the state and then aimed to collect more to make a profit. This often meant higher burdens and more pressure on the agricultural producers. It likely increased inequality in places like Kurdaw.
What kind of taxes are we talking about?
The main ones were the usher, basically a tithe on produce, often around 10%, but variable. Then the jizya, or kiraj, the poll tax on non-Muslims, and various other levies, avaries for specific state needs.
Were tax rates uniform?
Not always. We see evidence elsewhere of different rates for different villages or crops, and historically, some tribal leaders got exemptions, but those probably faded with 19th century Ottoman centralization efforts.
The Ottomans also tried to settle nomads, right? Iskan policies.
Yes, that was a long-standing policy, trying to get nomadic groups, including Kurds, to settle down, make them easier to tax, control, and eventually conscript.
Ah, conscription. That must have had an impact, too.
Definitely, especially after the Tanzimat reforms in the mid-19th century standardized it. Taking young men out of the villages for military service put a strain on the rural workforce and family economies. Sometimes met with resistance, too.
Okay, so pulling all these threads together, settled farming, pastoralism, Ottoman policies.
Mm-hmm.
How do we actually estimate that balance? You said numbers are hard.
Extremely hard. Ottoman records just don't give us neat occupational categories.
Mm-hmm.
We have some later sources, like Vital Quinet's work in the 1890s, but even that has known issues with accuracy and detail.
So we rely on the qualitative story.
Pretty much. And the story for settled agriculture being dominant is strong. You have the sheer scale and history of the olives, the fertile land, the trade links to Aleppo, those relatively weaker tribal structures.
All pointing towards settlement.
Right. But you can't ignore the pastoral side either. There's grazing land. Pastoralism was important generally for Ottomans and Kurds, and specific tribes were present.
So it's not an either-or situation.
Absolutely not. The reality was almost certainly mixed economies. Settled families definitely raised animals. Some pastoral groups might have done a bit of farming. The lines are probably quite blurry.
People adapting, using whatever resources were available.
Exactly. Which makes trying to put them in rigid boxes difficult and probably inaccurate.
But if you had to estimate, based on everything, what's the likely picture?
Okay, acknowledging the caveats. Based on the weight of evidence, particularly the olive economy, it seems reasonable to suggest settled agriculture was the primary lifeway for, let's say, somewhere in the range of 70 to 85% of the people.
Leaving maybe 15 to 30% primarily focused on pastoralism?
Something like that. And that 15, 30% would include various forms, maybe some full-time herders, but also a lot of that agro-pastoralism integrated into village life. Again, very fluid categories.
Oh, Hannah the Chai Lady is here. Roj Bosh Hannah.
Ah, perfect timing. Roj Bosh.
You know, Hannah, this chai. It's good, it's warm, but, is it just me, or is it a little on the bitter side today?
I was thinking the same thing. It's got a bit of a bite. Maybe needs a touch more sugar.
Definitely. Needs sweetening up a bit. Still, lovely to have it. Thanks, Hannah.
Yes, thank you. Much needed.
All right. Chai break over, let's dive back in. We've got a sense of the economy, the balance between farming and herding. What about daily life? Social structures, culture?
Okay, so broadly, Ottoman society had the ruling class, the askari, and the tax-paying subjects, the reya. Below that, religious communities, millets, handled their own internal affairs.
But locally, in a Kurda village,
leadership probably revolved around those village headmen, the agas, maybe influential landowners. And here's where the weaker tribal structure matters again.
Yeah.
Perhaps religious figures like Susi sheikhs held more social sway than they might have in areas dominated by powerful tribal chiefs.
Interesting. Afrin was known for Sufism, wasn't it?
Yes, a noted center for Sufi traditions, particularly the Naqshbandi and Qadiri orders. So these sheikhs could have been very influential locally.
And family. What was the basic unit?
Likely the patriarchal extended family. Strong kinship ties were vital, influencing marriage patterns sometimes within the lineage, often involving bride wealth or mar and community obligations.
And work was divided by gender?
Typically, yes. Men often focused on the main field work, trade and markets. Women had charge of the household, food processing, collecting water and fuel. But also, crucially, they were heavily involved in agriculture too, especially things like harvesting.
Now, the people themselves, primarily Kurdish, speaking Kurmanji.
Overwhelmingly, yes. Which gave Kurda maybe more ethnic homogeneity than some other nearby regions in northern Syria, which had more mixed populations.
And religion, mostly Sunni Muslim.
The majority were Sunni, likely following the Shafi school of law, as is common among Kurds. And as we mentioned, a strong Sufi influence.
Not exclusively Sunni.
No, there were important minorities, significant Yazidi communities, particularly in the southern and eastern parts of the region. Also Alevi communities, some perhaps tracing roots back to Anatolia, and smaller Christian groups too. So a degree of religious diversity and coexistence.
Culturally, beyond language and religion, what practices stand out?
Well, shared customs, traditions. A big one is Newroz, the spring equinox celebration.
With the bonfires and the story of Kawa the blacksmith.
Exactly. That whole mythology of liberation is tied into it. Hospitality was and is hugely important, often centered around village guest houses, specific rituals for marriages, for mourning.
Any local crafts?
Weaving was likely common, producing textiles for household use and maybe local trade, pottery perhaps. Some sources mention charcoal production from the woodlands.
And identity, was it tied more to tribe or something else?
Given the weaker tribal structures, it seems local identity might have been more strongly connected to one's village, the immediate community, the rhythm of the agricultural year, especially the olive harvest and local religious and cultural life, rather than allegiance to a large overarching tribe. So looking back at Ottoman Afrin or Kurday, we see this picture emerge. a place where olives weren't just a crop, they were really foundational to a settled way of life for most people.
Yeah, that agricultural base seems really solid. While pastoralism was definitely there, part of the mix, especially in the hills.
The weight of evidence really points to a predominantly agrarian society tied into those Aleppo trade routes.
And that point about the tribes being less dominant than elsewhere is fascinating. It must have shaped how villages were organized, how people related to the Ottoman state.
It likely did. It presents a different dynamic compared to, say, the Kurdish Emirates further east.
And then there's the daily life, the family structures, the mix of religions coexisting, the cultural practices like Newroz.
Yeah.
It gives you a real sense of the texture of life there.
Absolutely. The interplay of farming and herding, the impact of Ottoman rule, and that specific local social fabric, it all offers a really valuable window onto the complexities of the Ottoman world and, of course, the deep historical roots of the Afrin region itself.
It definitely makes you think about how landscape, economy, and social structures all weave together. We really encourage you, the listener, to look into some of the sources if you want to explore this further. There's always more to uncover about this fascinating history.